Welcome to Cybertopia Cast Interviews. This is Dee, who played Toby in Cybertopia Season 1. Dee, why don't you start with telling us who you are, a bit about yourself, and what your character was in Cybertopia?
Yeah, well, I am Dee, short for Denny, but I do prefer Dee when I'm in the online world.
You know, I'm not actually sure I knew that. Or I may have forgotten what your real name is. Like,
and that's quite possible. I've, for a very long time, I was very kind of snake with legs about my name, just because it's got a slightly unique spelling.
Oh, right.
Because it's not completely phonetic. It isn't spelled the way you would expect the name to be spelled. And so for a very long time, I was very cagey about it. But this is why I use Goth Hoblin as my kind of gatekeeper. So whoever makes it into her server may know my name.
fair. Okay. So, hi, Dee.
Yeah, I have played Toby, or Tobias Weiss, also known as Test Subject 187. Who was a very resilient test subject, which ended up being a very good thing for him.
Yes, definitely. And you had some very interesting experiences in your time in Cybertopia. Yeah. So you were only in two missions. You're in, I think it was like the fourth mission, the Greenhouse of Error.
Yeah.
And then you're in the finale mission that everyone was in one shape or another.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Greenhouse of Error mission just in itself was such a roller coaster ride.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever had as many crit fails and crit successes as we had in that session. I think it was like 14 or something in total. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And highly, highly entertaining. The moment that you got the trauma from ingesting some of the, I think it was like some goo from the plant that you cut open or something. Because obviously, you're a test subject. You can just test stuff by tasting it or whatever.
Yeah.
That was the best Nat 1 moment. It was brilliant. And you played it amazingly. Like, it was so well played, that whole development. And like, you've not done actual plays before, right?
I had not, like, in any major capacity. I think I'd done one actual play before that, which was just a one-shot of Werewolf the Apocalypse.
Cool.
But yeah, that was, Cybertopia was pretty much my first kind of foray into actual serious actual play type of stuff.
Was it just because it was me that put out the casting call? Were you looking to do anything like that at the time, or?
I was, in general, kind of looking at maybe trying it out. I liked it because I love playing TTRPGs. I just love the hobby. I've been in it for an immense amount of time. And doing it with a lot of different people in a different kind of setting every time just seems like one of the things that would kind of help me expand and learn new systems and everything. Because that's kind of like, that's my thing. New systems is my thing.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one thing I love, is just reading up on new rule sets, new systems, new settings and everything. And when you put out the call, I saw it, I was like, hey, this looks cool. And figured I might as well try.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't actually expecting to get a call back. I was just like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll go for it with my janky mic and see if it works.
Yeah, I would never have thought you had a janky mic. It sounds fine. And always came across as well.
The one that I'm using now is a different one, but yeah, the other one was just like the headset mic, which seemed to work well enough, but you know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, noise reduction and stuff in the editing process can do wonders. I don't recall what it was like editing your first episode, because, I mean, that was so long ago now.
Yeah.
I think, though it was the fourth one that we did, it was still like in maybe March last year, so nearly a year away, something like that.
Yeah. It's been a lifetime.
It has been a long time. And I think back to that, even when I was editing, that was a long time ago. So, what was your first impressions of the game and the group and everything when you did that first mission?
I loved it. To be perfectly honest, I wasn't entirely sold on Cybertopia the first time I read the system. Mm-hmm. But that is primarily because I am a very crunchy type of person when it comes to systems. So rules light stuff are actually a new thing for me. I come from a background of like D&D 3.5. So, you know, if I'm not subtracting like 5 to see how many attacks I have, what am I even doing? And so from seeing it from this kind of very trimmed down rules light version, I was thinking, I mean, sounded interesting. Of course, I'll give it a shot because it's a new system. But originally, I didn't think... I suppose it was actually one of the systems that kind of very much converted me to realizing that there is a lot of depth even within a rules light system that can be achieved. Not from a narrative perspective. Narrative perspective, obviously, can always reach untold depths and even discover stuff about yourself you didn't know. But just like from the rule set, how things interact with each other was something that I was very much converted by Cybertopia. And just the first game and everything, you know, I mean, everyone is just awesome people, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you played with Rev and Aiden, right? And you'd never played with them before. I'm not sure how much you even knew of them.
Never even heard of them. That was just like my first encounter with them.
But you all just jumped into it and gelled pretty well from the off. Like, it just kind of came together and the dice told a story for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think they're all fairly self-contained missions. So it's kind of like doing little one-shots, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, you all just got in there and started hamming about, and it was hilarious. I think the very first thing where you all jumped out of the chopper and parasailed or whatever down to the roof of the greenhouse.
I think that was the first one and the first 20.
Yeah. And that was just perfect coming together of nonsense.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Jeff the other day in his interview, and he was like, yeah, Cybertopia really lends itself to shenanigans
as
a system. And absolutely. Totally does. So, yeah. No, I wouldn't say it was completely plain sailing the whole way through. I feel like there was some tension in that first mission, particularly with Aiden was obsessed with wanting his character to eat the stuff. And Rev was very much the company man of being like, no, we are here to do our job. We will not destroy company property. And it was an interesting one to balance how much I let you kind of have your interpersonal conflict within the characters and to keep a story moving and stuff, because the episodes were always aimed to be 2 hour long kind of episodes. But yeah, it's funny going through them and listening back to them and hearing the development of the story as it went through. Like, the first half was very much just kind of settling in and getting in place. And then the second half, just everything just went mayhem. And it was like that in so many of the episodes.
Just, okay, this is chaos. Let's go.
The shit always hit the fan at that like break moment. And it just worked out really nicely every time.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any particular favorite moments of your own?
I think specifically from the Greenhouse of Error, I love the point where we all just kind of started basically brainstorming what kind of meat plants Amazing Corp was making with, like, the, what was it, the prosciutto caddo.
Yeah, was that your idea? Because
I think it, yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many of the other episodes you've listened to, but Prosciutto Cardo kept coming up after that.
Amazing. And I think the thing that I adored the most was just in the finale episode, just the pure chaos and confusion that our team caused when they just came in. And I was like, we're with these guys. What do you mean we're not supposed to be here? No, there's a problem. What's the problem? You're the problem. It's just like complete chaos from the get-go. Just like confuse and conquer.
That finale session was excellent because, I don't know, you were just thrown into it, right? And so you didn't really have much time to plan or strategize or anything. And the idea was, I always thought you were just going to get in there and just start fighting. But you got in there and you're like, everyone's, wait, what? So what do we do? we pretend that we're on their side or something. And it's just a moment. Yeah. You just imagine everyone just standing around going, and I think Morgan really kind of pulled it together. She was like, look, we just fell through the ceiling.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Really beautiful. Very much enjoyed from the other episodes, because I have listened to it a little bit, to the other episodes, and just honestly, I just love the variety of characters that appear. You just every time I listen to an episode, I'm just amazed by what kinds of characters, you know, come up. I mean, smart cool man and the tea dispensing butler robot, and just
smart cool man, I think, is a favorite ever of everybody's.
Yeah.
What's really interesting is that, like, there were 16 of you, right? You'd think that someone would have come up with a similar character to someone else in all that group. But no one at any point had to rejig a character because it was too close to something else. Like, there was even another test subject character.
Yeah.
But they were a lizard person. So it's just like so completely different.
I think purely theoretically, the closest we got was Toby's exoskeleton and the mech pilot, but still like completely different concepts.
Yeah, Buran was cool.
Yeah.
I've said to a couple of other people, I'd never considered mechs really in this game system when I was designing it. And when he came in and he was like, I want to be a mech pilot, I was like, yes, I don't know how this is going to work out balance wise, because other people are just like, I'm a person. I have maybe a gun or something. And you're like, I've got a big ass Gundam. Okay. And, but it worked out. And I think because of the way the system works, if even if you stack up all your points and everything, you get like a +8 or whatever total. And that's as high as you can go, whether you've got a big ass robot or a samurai sword and whatever.
Yeah, totally. The math is just going to be the same, you know? It just doesn't matter. It's just the flavoring, basically. Mm. But it's the flavoring that really makes something out of it. And that's actually one of the things that I really love about the rules themselves in the system, is this idea that if you have a +10 or more, it's really good. But if you fail, you're really going to have a hard time. I love that.
Yeah, and there were some great moments of that.
Yeah.
And it's been said a few other times, and I hope people listening to these interviews aren't, oh, Ben, you said the same thing in the last one and the one before. But the failure moments were some of the most entertaining ones, like where you got your, fuck, what even did we call it? It was like overstimulation or something like that.
I think
that.
So, something like that, yeah.
When you ate that stuff and you're like, I can taste everything. That moment was a failure, but it was so fun. And I think every time there was one of those nat one moments, it was never like, oh no, it's a disaster, everything's going wrong. It was just, this is fun. And everyone just kind of piles in with their improv to try and recover the situation. It was really good. There was never a point that it felt like nothing was happening or that it was boring or anything like that.
Oh no, not at all. Not at all. It was absolutely jam-packed with action and fun stuff, you know. And that's also a really powerful thing to be able to do, is to just say, you know, you fail and something happened. And you didn't just go, okay, well, you failed and the door doesn't open or whatever. You know, it's like also is a lot to do with the way you handled it. Because it's, you didn't just go, okay, yeah, you failed, try something else.
And I mean, obviously, like, there are always moments as a game runner or a GM or a DM or whatever where you're like, okay, I don't really know where we go from here, but I was always open to just opening the floor to you guys and being like, I don't know, what do you think would happen now? And everyone always had fun, silly ideas that they could contribute. And I think that was it. Everyone just bounced off each other and just kept the ball rolling, whatever was going on. And it was great. If you listen to at least some of the other episodes, were there any other favorite moments from other people's games?
I think mostly, honestly, just at the introductions and the entering. And it's, I just have so much fun with listening to other people try to figure out how they are going to approach a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, the group rolling up to the club and being important socialites and like all of that stuff, you know. And just the finale episodes, just looking at the various tiers of what's going on parallel to each other and just all of the stuff that's happening.
I was so glad with how the finale came together, because it was something I really worried about for a long time before we did it. I always knew that I was going to have the four different sides doing different things and coming together and affecting each other's play and stuff. And I knew that editing it was going to be potentially a complete nightmare. And trying to slice it up so that it makes narrative chronological sense, but also is entertaining and doesn't jump around too much so people get confused. But I think it really worked. And like by the time you guys came in, I think your group didn't get introduced until a third episode of the finale. But it slotted in, and there was stuff that you did that impacted what else happened, and other parties could hear what was going on sometimes, and like hear the gunshots from Cass's partner. But and then obviously the group itself that you had, brilliant. And I've mentioned this before as well, that exchange between you and Casa after you'd defeated the baddies in inverted commas, and the light goes off on your earpiece and you're like, I guess we have to kill off the last guy now. And Casa's like, well, don't you want to be your own person and stuff? And that exchange was one of these little moments. There wasn't a lot of conflicts within the series, but that little moment of moral conundrum that really kind of set a bar, I think.
I also don't know when and how it started, because it was very subtle, but there was just a point in that finale mission where we all just started going, are they going to screw us over? There was just a point where we all started kind of like getting a little bit suspicious, just a little bit... You know, this beeping is a bit ominous, the lack of response, bit ominous, you know, not sure if I should trust it or not. And it just, like, kept building up as the scene went on. It was just a great moment for Karen going, like, what are we doing? You know, kind of like the Mitchell and Webb look with, are we the baddies?
Yeah,
you
know,
it's like, our caps have skull caps. Are we the baddies? And it's just...
Yeah, I think we managed to kind of thread that line quite well throughout the whole season of... Mm. Not quite being the baddies, but
yeah,
I mean, it was always intended to be the gray moral side. Mm-hmm. You were doing some good things potentially for bad reasons and some bad things for potentially good reasons.
Yeah,
so that was the whole idea about it. But a lot of that is planned to change in season two, where I'm going to open the floor up to you lot. Basically, you're going to be in charge of everything. It will be almost entirely player led. Because, I mean, in season one, you had very little player agency. You were given your mission, you were told where to go and what to do, and we're all very contained. This season, I'm going to open up the floor, let you decide where you go, what kind of missions, loosely, you'll go on. Like, you may just decide to do open-worldy kind of stuff, sandbox it or whatever. Maybe you just go and get a job or something and do slice of life stuff. And I guess that leads me on to another question of, what do you think Toby will do now?
I think Toby's going to have a really hard time without the resources of Amazing Corp. Because he was relying a lot on basically just being regenerated in that cryostasis between things. He was very careless and reckless about how he went about things because he can take a beating and he is a resilient test subject. But
as long as he survives, he can be rebuilt.
Exactly. But he's not invulnerable. He's not immortal. So I think for Toby, it's going to be a lot of just coming to terms with the fact that now he's going to have to do his own stuff, which is really interesting to me because Toby was a character I'd adapted from a character I never got to play in a forum roleplay. So he was supposed to be just a character who basically was kind of a modern day superhero style forum. And the story for Toby was that he would be kind of the biochemist in charge of creating the chemical cocktails that he would have to inject himself with in order to pilot all of these kind of like mech-type exoskeleton suits. So I'd had like this whole concept of, you know, if he's using the speedster suit, then he really needs to shoot himself up with stuff that really enhances his mental reflexes and processing speed, while at the same time completely relaxing his body so nothing gets broken when the thing like moves in a jerky way and stuff. And that character became Toby. I like the name. It's just he became what Toby is in Cybertopia now. And so it's very interesting to kind of be now looking at an opportunity to go full circle and get back to that, get back to the point of him actually having to figure this stuff out on his own.
Do you think he's going to then be more careful in his approach to things? Is he going to be afraid of getting hurt now?
I think he's going to need a couple of beatings and a couple of broken bones to realize that how long it takes exactly to heal up naturally.
Well, I mean, like, maybe there's resources out in the city that he can find.
Yeah, possibly.
Or groups. I mean, part of what we're going to do is build out factions. So the three big factions, their leadership at least was decimated in the finale. They're larger than what was in that building. So there are still going to be splinter cells of what came out of those. But there's going to be a lot more factions that you can get involved in.
Yeah.
And you'll be taking part in developing them and identifying what groups you maybe have allegiances to, if any. Do you think, would Toby try to join another faction, or would he just want to stay within a small cell of the people who are left from Amazing Corp?
That's a good question. I think he would probably, for the time being, stick to the people from Amazing Corp, the Tabula Rasa agents, purely because they kind of got screwed over in the same way as he did. So wherever their allegiances may lie, he knows that they're not going to lie with CyberCorp. Or at least he hopes, of course. I'm sure, and I'm hoping, honestly, that there will be characters who will be like, oh, well, if I kind of deliver all of these people back to Amazing Corp, then I'm going to be in their good graces again and stuff.
It'll be very interesting because most of the characters were just, this is a job to me sort of thing. But the one person that I do wonder about that I'm looking forward to doing the interview with will be Rev, because his character was very, I love Amazing Core.
Mm.
So I don't know if he'll be in that mindset that you say of like wanting to get back in their good graces, or if he'll go the complete other way and be like, they stabbed me in the back. I hate them more than anybody.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think you'll go on like a revenge trip? And have you given any thoughts to a Onward character arc?
Just from a background of having read a lot of fantasy and having followed a lot of shows, movies in that direction, everything. The second part, like the sequel, the second season, the second movie, whatever you want to call it, is kind of like, it feels like it will be the kind of gathering of wits and resources and allies and kind of like trying to find our way within this world. That is honestly completely new to us, because most of us spent most of our lives either on mission or in stasis. So it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of us didn't even know what the world outside was like, other than like the very few forays that we had into it when we had something to do outside. And for that reason, it feels like season two is going to be a lot of just kind of finding ourselves and finding what the prospects are. And then revenge against Amazing Core sounds like something that would start happening around season three.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, we've had that first season, and this will be like the Empire Strikes Back kind of season, and then Return of the Jedi at the end or something, maybe. I guess we'll see what happens during season two to see if we do a season three and what kind of shape it will take. One of the things that I plan is that rather than having disjointed groups and far apart sessions and disconnected missions, what I'm hoping that I can manage to do will be you do like 4, 5, maybe 6 sessions with the same group and have yourselves your own little developmental arcs and get those interpersonal relationships going. Are there any other PCs that you would like to play with again, or that you didn't play with that you'd like to play with? Or
honestly, just all of them. Such amazing characters. I'd love to play with each and every one of them. Like you said yourself, Julie is going to be a very interesting kind of character to see how she develops in the face of this betrayal, you know, this kind of like corporate treachery. But also, I unfortunately am forgetting the name of the character. The stylish Zap. Yeah.
Zap was another cast favorite, I think. I haven't interviewed Morgan yet, but I'm really looking forward to doing that one. Yeah, very, very strong character. But also played in such a way that didn't take over a scene. Like, she was definitely a presence, but it didn't, it never felt like the only person there.
As far as characters go, feels like a very kind of natural leader. And so if I do end up being paired with Morgan in season two, Toby is probably just going to kind of like fall into following Zap's lead, you know, just kind of like, you seemed like you had your shit together. And so I think that it's a good thing to follow you because, you know, even if you don't know what to do, you make a decision. Whereas I just let situations fall over me and kind of try to survive them.
Just react. Oh, it'll be really interesting. When I get to talk to Morgan, like, nah, Zap's going to just go into a shell.
Yeah, just that.
No, that's great. So something else that I'm planning for season two is that because you no longer have access to Amazing Core facilities, you're going to have vastly reduced points. So skill points and item points and stuff. What would be, you think, the like iconic things that you'd want to keep for Toby? I'm guessing the exosuit would be a pretty key thing.
The exosuit would make sense just because he like ended up buried under the building with it on him. That's the one thing that you would have a hard time extracting.
Yeah, maybe it will be a bit damaged and whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. But I think for Toby, as far as gear is concerned, I'm not very concerned about the gear. Because he'll just have to tap into either find engineers that can do stuff for him or tap into kind of like that himself. The most important part of Toby is actually, apart from the core, which is resilient test subject that's staying, of course, but it's actually the chemistry and biochemistry knowledge. It's actually the intellect part of his character, which didn't get a lot of use, so to speak, but this was also by design, because as an agent of Tabula Rasa, he wasn't in a lab environment. He was
more a recipient than a...
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But he still very much knew what's going on as far as what he was receiving. So it's not like he wasn't just getting tested on with some random stuff that he didn't know anything about. In my kind of headcanon, he actually has a very good idea of what he was being given. And so that's kind of the thing that he is now going to start having to rely on more, you know, devising his own stuff. And maybe that will also prove his usefulness to whatever group he ends up with, because he will be able to dispense painkillers and stuff like that, you know, very, very necessary first aid stuff.
He's going a bit Professor Hulk kind of route.
Yeah, okay. Kind of, yeah.
Like it. Yeah, and the utility, as you say, can spread to a lot of different areas and be the support character or the medic and that sort of stuff as well. Yeah, there's a lot that you can do with him. That's interesting to hear how, like, I don't know, when we actually get down to playing, who knows how things are going to change and how people will develop
their kinds
of stuff. So, yeah. Are there any loose ends that you'd like to find out about? Like, anything that was left dangling? Like, I don't think there was that many, like, cliffhangers as such, but there was... There was a few little tidbits, like what kind of thoughts would Toby be wanting to follow up on in season two?
When does the Prudocado hit the market?
I mean, it's already out there in like black market form.
Yeah.
I don't know if you listened to the Signs of the Times episode, but that was out in a rundown derelict neighborhood. And the team that went in there took along a whole bunch of this food from your episode, and that started getting distributed, and people were like, oh my god, Prosciutto Cardo is amazing and stuff. So it's out there in some form.
Yeah I
don't know if it would have been released. That's something I think I'll have to think about, of whether it would have been recalled after the incident in the greenhouse.
That
have forged ahead.
I suppose the thing that Toby himself would most be interested in figuring out is, what exactly was it that happened in the Greenhouse of Error? Like, what was this concoction that made these plants become monstrous and come to life? Because that was a very kind of strange reaction. You don't expect that reaction from growth hormones, but it's the future. But the other thing is just, I suppose for me as a player, it would just be interesting to know what the criteria is for the company to decide when a resource becomes obsolete. Like, what was it that made all of these Tabula Rasa agents expendable all of a sudden?
Yeah.
And are there going to be other Tabula Rasa agents that we are then going to have to fight against? I'm assuming so.
Like I said, I've not actually planned out anything for season two, so this may come up as a natural occurrence. I don't know.
I'm a very big supporter of the idea that players should always theorize and theorycraft in front of their DM.
And this is one of the beauties of doing these interviews, to really find out what you guys are interested in and what you're worried about and stuff. And then I can just play on that stuff when we get into play. That's an interesting one. I hadn't really thought about that, actually.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, you know yourself, because whenever you answered my world-building prompts for Cybertopia, I kept fishing. I kept trying to get to that, tell me they're evil, you know, point. Like, show me the evil megacorp of the dystopian future of Shadowrun and all of that. And it's just, it's not there. They're just a company that's just doing stuff. And on the grand scheme of things, they're bettering the world. And they're bettering it for a larger percentage of the population than you would expect them to. Yeah. So it's like, you've done such an amazing job of making Amazing Core so morally great that it is very difficult to both love and hate them. Like, it is very difficult. You can't. It's just...
I've somehow managed to strike that balance. I mean, it was always the intention with the system, right?
Like,
Cyberpunk is one of these things where the corporations are always, like, super evil.
Yeah.
And they're very obviously the bad guys. I don't want it to be a realistic setting where it makes sense, really. But I wanted it to be, I don't know, semi-realistic or something.
It just feels to me like it is less of a classical superhero comic book type of setting. It's not, you have these evil people, the evil people are there, the evil people are doing the evil thing, go beat the evil people.
Yeah.
That's not the thing that's happening. It's every character actually has to make their own decisions about this. They have to really question themselves and their own morals and ethics and figure out, am I on board with this or not?
Yeah.
And that's what's so interesting, now that we're going to get going into season two, is how all of these ex-Tabula Rasa agents are going to come to terms with that. Because every single one of us so far has just approached it as, it's a job, I'm going to do my job, and I'm going to have a nice cushy life. And never questioned the morality behind it. And now everyone's going to start to, especially that now that they're in the world, and now they have to find shelter and find a place to sleep and find food and find resources and probably get jobs and start forming relationships with people.
And find out what the real world is actually like beyond exactly. what you could see exactly. within the tabula rasa life.
Exactly.
I really love answering your world-building prompts, and I probably miss quite a lot of them because Twitter is just a bowl these days.
Yeah.
If anybody isn't, you should follow D Night Wanderer on Twitter, and you're also on Blue Sky, right?
Yep, same name tag, Night Wanderer with an O.
Yeah, you do these world-building prompts every now and again, and I think you have a different thing each day, right?
Monday through Wednesday, it's the weekly prompts. Mondays, I do a Monday loading screen tip, which is kind of like intended to be sometimes useful advice for DMs and players, and sometimes just kind of funny things that have happened in my own games that can happen or that I've heard of. Tuesdays are the No Tavern Tuesday, which is just kind of basically prompts and tips how to start a campaign, how to start a one-shot, like a very basic starting plot outline.
The we didn't meet in a tavern kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then Worldly Wednesdays are the ones with the world-building prompts where I just kind of ask a question. And the intention behind that is just, while I do sometimes go for the big ones that everyone has developed, I generally try to ask questions that are kind of small scale that I think breathe life into a world. So stuff like, what's the food like? What are the iconic pastries from different regions? Stuff like that, you know.
And it's that stuff that I really love thinking about, because it's stuff you don't think about when you're building a world, or the smaller things. And when you think about them, suddenly that opens up something and it makes you think about the world in a different way. Like, oh yeah, maybe Amazing Corp have a pastry department or something.
Yeah.
What would happen in a world that is trying to move away from emission-based agriculture?
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing behind the Greenhouse of Error is that they're trying to develop a way to make meat without having cattle.
Yeah.
And it goes horrifically wrong, but they'll probably still continue it in some form.
Oh, of course.
But there's so many things.
But that's kind of like exactly the point. Because when you start building a world, especially if you're building a world specifically for a campaign, you know, you go, these are the gods, and this is the great evil lich Garth Thubazard, who has decided to raise an army and invade the world, and he is going to conquer everything.
It's easy to come up with a big picture.
Yeah, exactly. And you need that, of course, for a grand sprawling campaign, but how does that affect Jack the potato farmer who is dealing with a gold bug infestation?
Yeah, and how are those potato farmers going to survive now that there's pork potatoes out
there? Exactly. Yeah, how is Italy dealing with the fact that Amazing Corp is now producing the prosciutto caro? You know, their whole economy is screwed now.
You know, it's something that I never actually defined and have never really put much thought into, of where is Amazing Corp? Are they across the whole world? Are they located in this specific city? Like, this is where the headquarters are. That's where you operate from. But I never actually decided where that city is. Is that in Europe, in America, in some other place? That'll be maybe something that gets determined during the world building game that I have kind of put together that will do as a preamble to season two. But all we know is there is like a coastline, there's a harbor. There's a I think I might have said Atlantic, so I guess it's on an Atlantic coast. So, yeah.
It almost feels like one of those very James Bond-type distant islands somewhere off the coast of wherever, like in the middle of the ocean.
In a volcanic crater.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, except that the whole volcanic crater has been repurposed.
Yeah. And is probably getting mined for the rare metals, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I can't wait to get into that game, actually, with you lot, because I think you're really going to blow up this world in ways that I hadn't even thought of, and I'm going to give you control over your own faction, as in that game, but not anything related to your characters in the podcast. So then you'll have this kind of ownership of an area that you then have specific knowledge about, and specific buildings or characters that you introduce through this system that will come into the world and really give you avenues to explore that probably you don't even know at the moment and won't know until we actually get playing. And then we'll mix together the groups again when we go into actually playing the season two, and you'll each have your own little tidbits that you did, because I'm not going to have all 15 of you that are left, because Ray, who played Buran, has left. There's still 15 of you left, which is amazing. Out of a cast of 16, that only one person ended up pulling out at the end. But yeah, I'm not going to have all 15 of you playing this world builder game at the same time, because it's going to be battle with chaos. But if I have like groups of five or something, and then when we get into playing, you're in different groups and each of you knows different things about the city. That's going to be really interesting to see how that information gets shared and if people keep secrets from each other and stuff. Mm. If the characters end up going down different roads or going off on their own little side quests and stuff.
Just as a warning, if you give me the power, I am going to introduce the camel hawk.
I mean, yeah, I have often thought about ways that we could have a introduction of Overgrown into this world somehow.
It would fit perfectly, honestly.
I do literally have in the Overgrown book a Welcome to the Apocalypse mission where at the end of it, your characters burst out of what turns out to be a lab and they come out into the open world and it is a city. And
Yeah,
I was looking it up the other day because I'd realized that we'd never actually said the name of the city during the whole of the season, despite we discussed it before doing any recording and we determined the city. And do you remember what that city was? Because we were going like over a year ago.
I do not.
No, so it was Paradigm City.
That's right.
Was the name that we came down to.
That's right.
And I think it was a suggestion from Jen, who played Maurice. And I think it's a perfect name, actually. Really good. And I think that will obviously be said a bit more during season two, because it wasn't said ever during season one. It's just a generic city that happens to have Amazing Corp in it. And so, yeah, when we get into defining
Paradigm
how all
city,
of this stuff fits together, where it is, how all of the groups and stuff operate, or even what all the groups are, because if I give each of you a faction to represent, that's 15 factions. So, yeah.
That will also be very interesting, because you don't get the idea that there would be so many, especially with season one kind of only focusing on the three, basically, just the three major ones or whatever. And then, like, if we come in and there's all of a sudden all of these other, maybe smaller even, factions, but still factions, still people who have their own politics, their own agenda, their own goals that they want to accomplish, that'll be very interesting.
Yeah, I feel like after the three big main groups, right, they get destroyed, more or less. They become a big target of Amazing Corp. I figure other groups that have similar feelings or even leftovers from those groups would, like, maybe we stay smaller and then we can stay under the radar better and stuff like that. So it won't be quite such a big group rebellion sort of thing. There's going to be a lot of disparate groups with different aims and different styles and stuff. Maybe different locales, and then we'll see how those smaller groups operate, how they cooperate or diverge from each other. Yeah. I got a taste of some of the ways that you might well build within the episode you're in, and particularly in the Signs of the Times episode, I made that a lot more collaborative in that I was like, we're going to this neighborhood. I will let you define what the buildings are that you're going to go to see. There's like a cafe, coffee shop kind of thing. And they decided that was going to be a 90s themed diner.
Yeah.
And there was, so it should be a drinking establishment. And they decided it was going to be a bowling alley. So when I let you guys loose, I know especially some of you in particular will go wild and introduce the most ridiculous things. And I can't wait to see how that comes together.
Yep. Absolutely. Just random crap. Actually ends up being coherent. That's the beauty
that's
of
the
it.
Thing, right? Yeah, it'll all come together somehow, because I know you lot are all these kinds of people, and though none of you really knew each other, or some of you loosely knew each other beforehand but not really, I think because of the community that I surrounded myself with when I was pitching this to everybody, you're all of a like mind. Like, I wouldn't have invited you all to join if you weren't, I guess. Like, these are the sorts of people that like me, I guess, and would apply to do a actual play, because I'd never done this before. I'd never been on someone else's podcast before, let alone run my own. And I understand that the way that we've done this is also very different to the way that people normally do an actual play, in that the drop-in, drop-out kind of large cast.
It's really amusing, though, because almost directly after Cybertopia, well, not directly, but it took a while, but at some point there was another call for a different actual play, which is the Would-Be Heroes one, which is a Marvel TTRPG superheroes one, and it ended up being a similar concept. We're also somewhere around 15 to 20 players, and we've got like two groups running with six players each, with drop-in and drop-out and mixing around and everything, and
Okay.
And actually,
I need to look this one up.
I think there are a lot of very interesting benefits you can get from having a large player pool where everyone is agreed with the idea of being either temporarily in a group for a short time or dropping or having a couple of randomly chronologically spaced sessions or something like that, because then you always have a pool of very different, very interesting characters to pull from.
Yeah.
And with time, I think you can also start to really also tailor stories really well with just basically what the cast is that you're playing with. I think that's a very cool way to go about it, and also amazingly, amazingly well done on part of anyone who decides to herd 15 TTRPG player cats.
I was warned.
Into a single system. I mean, that is really just chapeau. My hat is off.
I mean, to be honest, I really wasn't planning on it being like that from the start. When I put out the casting call, I was thinking, oh, I'll probably get a handful of people apply, and then I'll just like have four or five playing, and it'll be like a normal actual play. Yeah. You hear a group go through a campaign, and I would have had the same group do 9-10 missions.
Mm.
But then I had, I don't know, I think it was like 20 in the end that applied, and I couldn't decide. I was like, okay, fuck it, I'll just take everyone, sure.
Amazing.
Because when I was playtesting the system, when I was writing it in the first place, in like 2018, I think it was, I playtested it with my workmates and friends. And I always had it as like a drop-in, drop-out thing of, okay, who's available and wants to try out this new mission that I've written up? It ended up working really well. And it was at that point that I was thinking, oh, this could work as a podcast kind of thing of like the drop-in, drop-out stuff and not having a set group. Because sometimes a set cast can really become the feature of the podcast, right? Mm,
yeah.
And I think my idea with doing this podcast in the first, doing this actual play, is that nobody knows Cybertopia as a game system, and there's no examples really of play. And so I wanted to have a podcast that would showcase the system more than the players. And obviously you are all a big part of it, and the way you played, the way you showcase the system was very key. But I wanted to have a way that I could show off the system. And I think that has now grown into its own thing of the podcast is a podcast and people identify with some of the characters and the characters have grown their own small stories within what happened. And I now am like, well, how do I grow this to the next level? I let those stories grow. We've got the system down. Now we need the world and we need the characters and the people. Yeah.
But that's also a kind of a thing of, by virtue of it, because I think I was one of a few who actually only had two missions. I think most people got to be in three and just work came up that time.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing, scheduling and stuff. That was one of the advantages of having
Absolutely. But it's just, even by virtue of having everyone 2 to 3 times in the first season, you've already begun establishing specific characters and specific people. So you still have this feature of what most actual plays have of, you know, you have your characters, you have your cast, except that here, basically for all of those who are listening and who like it, they actually have a much larger pool to choose their favorites from. You know, they can pick 3 favorites out of 20.
I wonder, like, if I was to ask a random audience member, I don't know who that isn't the cast listens really, but if I was to ask people, what people would you most want to put together, I wonder what people would say. Like, what groups do you want to see again? That sort of thing would be really interesting.
Well, that would be very interesting.
So I think we're kind of coming to a close here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to open the floor to you of any questions that you might want to ask or any world building prompts you've got stored up.
I mean, honestly, I just really psyched and looking forward to season 2 and really want to keep playing both Toby and I just want to meet all of the other characters as well.
I guess I'm not planning on it being particularly mission-based in season 2, but what kind of play do you think you most like of this kind of system? What kind of quests or missions or sorts of things would be something that you'd want to go down the road of in the future?
That's a good question, which is shorthand for I was not prepared for it. as is right and should be. Honestly, what I'm really most looking forward to is just seeing this kind of transitionary period of being cut off, being probably considered dead, and then at the same time trying to figure out how the world around the characters now suddenly works because it has changed drastically. And how they find their lives happening and developing within that situation. Just as you said, like, are we going to go slice of life? Is everyone just going to go off finding jobs and working in an office? Or is the call to, I suppose, adventure wouldn't be the word because it's not exactly an unexplored world as such, but is the call to do something that is maybe a little bit more dangerous, a little bit more daring, something that is more appealing? Are the characters just going to end up organizing a dangerous delivery company and just go on, you know, basically
start questing.
Yeah, just like Amazon Super Prime deliveries delivering into the mouths of lions and volcanoes. And
yeah.
Because they are definitely all of them characters who have very unique sets of skills. And that is definitely something that they now have the opportunity to offer to the wider world of Cybertopia that maybe has not been available prior to that, because Amazing Corps has sort of monopolized it with Tabula Rasa, you know.
With his chemistry and biology knowledge and stuff, do you think he'd, like, take up a job? Could he become, like, a pharmacist character or something?
I think he might. I think he might purely for the access to the resources. Probably something inconspicuous so as to stay off the radar of Amazing Corps, but something where he can still have access to ingredients which he can do with. So I see Toby as probably very easily heading down shadier black market type routes as well.
Okay. You could, like, join a drug gang or something.
Yeah, not quite Heisenberg it with Breaking Bad and just be the best, but more along the lines of this concept of altruistic drug gang type of stuff. You know, kind of like providing necessary stuff for people who need it, but maybe cannot afford it or don't have it or don't have access to it.
I mean, we've never determined in this setting how illegal all drugs are. Like, maybe they go down a road of decriminalization in the next 30 years. And there's an episode where the team were clearing out a drug gang. So there are definitely illegal drugs, but there may be legal drugs that can be manufactured and stuff that you could be involved in. So you don't necessarily have to go down the dark road there.
No, not at all. But it's just, if for Toby, the main thing at this point is having been a test subject for Amazing Corps and having sort of been discarded with the latest events, he sort of sees himself as in danger if Amazing Corps figures out that he's alive. So keeping a low profile is probably going to be a priority for him.
I mean, you were probably discarded for a reason.
Yeah.
And they probably want to keep that discarded reason.
Exactly. So that's the main reason why, so kind of like, I see him going down a shadier route, just on the principle of maybe finding a more official, more sanctioned job route, being one that essentially ends up leading back to Amazing Corps, which is something that he perceives as dangerous at the moment. Well,
I mean, he also wants to stay under the radar, so that's a big thing.
Exactly.
So, you said that this was, like, your first big actual play experience. Have you done anything else since? Have you had any thoughts about doing anything else?
Well, I've been on a couple of one-shot type things with Derek from DMDM Studios. We've done Kobold's one shot, which was amazing fun, and I've done a Trial by Fire with Lost Haven of Demon Castle Dracula. The main big thing that I'm in with now is the Would-Be Heroes actual play that I talked about, which is kind of like really fun because we're essentially playing within the Marvel Multiverse TTRPG, but we've already kind of done a lot of homebrewing and stuff with it to kind of adapt it better to the style of play that we're doing.
What's your character like in that?
I am playing, to use the sentence that I introduce him with every time, I'm playing Gideon Price, a perfectly normal, rich white guy who is, he's kind of like, because we're all playing superpowered individuals. His superpower, I've kind of asked the DM, and he was amazingly kind to comply, is I took the healing factor, but I've reduced it. He doesn't heal as quickly as people with a healing factor do, but he heals even when he's dead. So he keeps coming back to life. So he's just...
Right.
The only thing that he has going for him is that he's uniquely bad at staying dead. And everything else is just experience. He's about 200 years old. He's just got lots of money, lots of connections. You know, he's really playing the classic old rich white boys club, you know.
Right.
But in the background, there's this whole thing. And his whole story is he was always in the kind of morally gray area, and he was providing information and assistance to whoever was paying. Didn't matter if it was superheroes or supervillains. And then at some point he saw the results of helping a supervillain a bit too close. There's this amazing quote from Dead Like Me. Amazing show. It's from the early, mid-2000s.
All right.
Dead Like Me. Fantastic show. But there's this one point where one of the characters is talking about how, you know, you watch all of these comedy sketches and, like, something, a pan falls onto a guy's head and it's funny and you laugh and everything. But if you get too close, and if you get close enough to see the pain on his face, it stops being funny.
Right.
Because then your empathy kind of triggers.
Yeah.
For it. And that's kind of the concept that I took with Gideon. And I said, okay, well, he saw how bad it can get if he keeps helping villains. So now he's kind of like trying to go the hero route. And he's met like just the randomest bunch of characters along the way. It's such fun because basically we just end up on really random tangents and just discussing completely inane stuff in character because that's just who the characters are, you know. And it was really fun getting to play Gideon because he keeps giving statements from himself which are kind of like questionable, but they always come at very inopportune moments. So the team just regularly goes, okay, that is something we need to talk about later. And so then we go on to whatever is at hand.
Cool. I'm loading this up now. I'm going to make sure I start listening to this. Would Be Heroes, right?
Would Be Heroes, yeah. It's pre-recorded. It is...
or streamed?
It's a stream. It premieres on Twitch. It is a pre-recorded and edited actual play, but we do play it on Twitch, and the videos then get uploaded to YouTube as well. Same name, Would Be Heroes.
Get it on my YouTube, then.
Mike is just a great DM, and he is amazing with pulling all of the various strings together, and the story, you can really feel it coming together. So, and my co-players are just great people. I love it. And yeah, it's Mondays and Saturdays. We have two different groups. I'm on the Saturday group, and then there's the Monday group, though we do sometimes jump around, you know, and the intention is to make it like one big kind of Avengers type group of heroes where people just go on missions according to availability.
Awesome. I found it. Would Be Heroes Marvel TTRPG actual
play. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm gonna start on this.
Yeah, and as far as other stuff is concerned, I am trying to get everything organized and to also overcome a lot of imposter syndrome and all of that stuff and actually start streaming myself.
Cool.
The primary thing that I want to do, which is probably going to take a little bit longer because I do need a pool of players and everything, is I really want to do one-shots and or short campaigns of every time a different system.
I'm into this.
To kind of just showcase the variety of stuff out there, because it's just so amazing how much stuff is out in the hobby. And it doesn't matter if it's like a bigger company or if it's indie or, you know, it's just so much awesome stuff out there. And I really want to showcase it. I really want to kind of try to establish a resource for people who are new to the TTRPG hobby to have to look at and go, there's a lot of different games. I can try a lot of different games. I can try a lot of different flavors and themes and see what works best for me. And kind of like the format that I want to do with that is to have a short discussion kind of like of the rules and of the system itself, of the theme, then have the actual play, either a one-shot or a short campaign, depending on what works best for the system. And then after that, I would very much like to also interview the players and kind of talk to them about what they thought of the system, how they compare to other systems and stuff like that.
Sounds cool.
That's kind of like the plan for the future. For the beginning, I am actually going to start probably streaming just video games, RPGs. I mean, obviously Baldur's Gate 3, because I've sunk so much time into it, I might as well try to do something useful with it.
Do you have a Twitch already?
I do have a Twitch already. It's the same handle, Night Wanderer, Wanderer with an O. It's still completely empty and unpopulated. I am slowly working on it. But yeah, those are kind of like the big plans for the future, apart from also writing my own system.
Yeah. So Tell me a bit about this.
The system is basically going to be a very skill-oriented one. My primary concern with it is that you get better at the stuff that you do a lot. So the way the system works is you always roll a skill of some sort, and if you roll high enough, it gets better. So it's kind of like...
A bit like in Cybertopia, how if you roll a nat 20 in something, yeah, then you get the learning.
Yeah,
if you
exactly. Roll
on the same thing a lot, then you're likely to get those learnings.
Exactly, yeah, kind of like that. And I play a lot with kind of like different dice types. So for instance, if you're completely unskilled, you roll a d4, dice explode. So every time you roll the highest number, you roll again, add on to it. And when you roll high enough, it goes from a d4 to a d6, for instance, and stuff like that. And then the main theme of the system is going to be the aspects, which is kind of like a special ability the character has, which is defined by just a short sentence. So it can be something like, I can control fire, or something as abstract as, I find useful things, or...
I love abstract.
Like, literally, my local group is playtesting it, and we've just got an amazing set of aspects that was just, like, I've got one guy who... I don't know how he worded it exactly, but basically it's a kind of, like, you are what you wear, or, like, dress for the job you want to have. So his aspect is kind of like the... A thing from the Hitman games where when he puts on a driver's uniform, he's suddenly perceived as the driver by everyone around him and stuff like that. So he's kind of like a very kind of camouflagey type thing. Ooh. And then we've got one whose aspect is, I'm going to be gone now. And it's just, it's both kind of like teleporting away as well as just fading into the background and not being noticed.
Uh-huh.
And we've got one that is just, I've made a pact with a demon. That's really fun.
Cool.
So yeah. The idea of it is that I'm really going to play with the idea of reincarnations and getting to one's true self. So the characters are kind of, they are the special individuals within the universe. And there are other special individuals as well. But basically they are in touch with some sort of a reality transcending true self, which can manifest itself by improving in certain skills much faster and having this aspect, which is kind of like the truth of the being. So the idea ultimately for the system is to be very versatile as far as theme is concerned, so that you can play it literally in any given theme. And then also that you would be able to transport your character from different kind of realities into other ones while still keeping them intact, keeping them themselves.
Sounds cool. So how complete is it?
Well, the playtest that I have going on currently has... both fortunately and unfortunately morphed into a fully blown game. So we are more focused on the story than we are testing the rules. As it stands, it seems to be largely finished. It's got some more kinks to do. And then I've only, focus on the word only, got to write it all out in a way that is not entirely too mathematical and crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I am going to make a call for any groups who might be interested in trying it out and playtesting it and giving me their opinions on it. Cool. And so, yeah, it's kind of like, I'm going to say it's probably about somewhere between 40 and 60% done.
Okay. Do you have a ideal time frame you'd like to get it finished and out into the world this year? Next year.
I mean, honestly, the ideal time frame would have been last year.
Yep.
It does not work like that. I am hoping to have it. I think this year is probably going to be a bit too ambitious with just the time frames of different playtesting groups and stuff.
Especially if you want to do other stuff like,
you
know, do a Kickstarter or get art done and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
So I'm going to say, because I really want to fine-tune it and really want to be happy with the end product, I'm probably going to say it's going to be a 3 years from now type of thing.
I mean, it seems reasonable, like, unless you want to be trying to do this full-time and finance it and stuff. Yeah, no.
Yeah. But,
okay, well, I love the sound of it. Whenever you get to doing more open play tests and whatnot, give me a shout. And
absolutely.
So the streaming thing also, yeah, I would love to get involved. I am looking forward to listening to you on Would Be Heroes. And obviously, I will also be interacting whenever I see you pop up on the Twitter feed or Blue Sky, whichever I happen to be browsing when Monday, Tuesday or Wednesday comes around and you pop up.
Absolutely.
Been great chatting with you. Is there any last shout outs you'd like to give? Any last, where can we find yous that we've not done or anything like that?
I'm relatively easy to find as far as that is concerned. Twitter, Blue Sky, Twitch, all of the places I'm with the handle. handle Night Wanderer, that's Wanderer with an O. And other than that, I'm just generally chatting away and happy to talk to everyone about everything as far as TTRPGs are concerned. The major shout out is honestly just for you, because of organizing all of this and actually getting to herd all of the cats together into what ended up being an incredibly fun project that I really look forward to working on more.
Let's see if I can do it again this year, hey?